your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a few clips this evening. And I just wanted to mention that we just got back from the Branch Davidian Memorial that's held yearly in Dallas on April 19th. And Clive Doyle was the master of ceremonies. He is every year. And we stayed at, we had the symposium, or the memorial, I should say, at the Helen Marie Taylor Museum there in Waco. And she's just really a fine lady. She's devoted her life to establishing this Waco history there at that museum. And also, she's a daughter of the American Revolution, and she has the Bloomberry Farms up in, there's a home up there that's been declared a historical home. Well, anyway, we're going to start off with Victor Davis Hanson, and he's going to lay out in very short terms some of the problems that we've had, that Trump has had with the conspiracy, actually, to wiretap him and to listen to him and to destroy his presidency. So here we go with Victor Davis Hanson.
Now that special counsel Robert Mueller has found no Russia collusion, and Attorney General William Barr is publishing the Mueller report, what's in store for President Trump? How could the extraordinary efforts to remove the president from office backfire on those who are orchestrating such efforts? And how can President Trump's approach to America be seen as an attempt to solve a crisis of the spirit? This is American Thought Leaders, and I'm Yanya Kellick. Today we sit down with Hoover Institution and National Review Institute fellow Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. He is a columnist, a scholar of American and ancient history, and the author of numerous books, the most recent being The Case for Trump. We discuss Dr. Hanson's new book, President Trump's Unorthodox Strategy to Engage the American Electorate, and how both current events and historical precedent position the president for 2020. Victor, it's wonderful to have you on American Thought Leaders.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's actually kind of funny because you sort of personify what this show is all about, you know, as a leading American intellectual.
I don't know if I'm leading or not.
Well, it seems to me, and certainly others I've talked to. So you're a historian of both American and ancient history. You're a fellow of the Hoover Institution where we are now in NRI. But you're also a columnist. I saw you're a tour guide. You're actually a farmer. That's a very interesting story behind that. And of course, author of many books, which includes The Case for Trump, which is you know why we're here to talk about that. I really enjoyed the book. As I was saying a little bit earlier, it kind of helped me contextualize a lot of what I've been seeing in the landscape. But so let's start with something that figures significantly into the news right now that actually is prominent in the book, which is basically how the Russia collusion narrative has fit into the campaign, 2016 campaign, and then into the election afterwards. You made some predictions around what the outcome of whether the Mueller report would have one outcome or another, what would actually happen. And I'm very curious if you could kind of give us a rundown. So now that we do know what the outcome is, or at least roughly, how does that change the case for Trump?
Well, in the book, I think I concluded my chapter on Mueller that was written a year ago, that the the greatest irony in Trump's presidency, he was falsely accused of colluding with Russia by people who were actually colluding with Russia. And I think that assessment that came out well before that Mueller was validated, I think we're going to get the Barr report today or tomorrow.
Right.
The Mueller report, excuse me. But if you were to summarize the Mueller investigation, there's a lot of ways to look at it, but I think the best is that there were people within the United States government. The director of the FBI, James Comey, the director of the CIA, John Brennan, the director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, the deputy director, and an array of others in the NSC and the DOJ, who felt, A, that Hillary Clinton was going to win. They had followed the analytics and the polls.
Right.
90% surety. But they felt, as an insurance policy, that Donald Trump, for a variety of reasons, culturally, politically, socially, was unacceptable as president. And the very thought that he could be president was so foreign and disruptive that they felt they had a higher duty, a higher loyalty to stop that. So what did they do? They started to surveil his campaign. They put informants, we know, into his campaign. In October of 2016, they went to a federal surveillance court, FISA court, and deluded that court by not telling the true nature of opposition research from Hillary Clinton's campaign, which was unverified. And then they used that to surveil Carter Page, who had worked for Trump, but they were able to go back in time to a time when he was actively and surveil his communications and then reverse target that by tapping all the people that he had talked to. They, in the case of the National Security Agency, National Security Council, they requested names that came up in these surveillance that be unmasked, and then they leaked them. How did this translate in real terms? If you and I were reading newspapers in September, October 2016,
right.
Mother Jones, Yahoo News, they were printing things that Trump was involved with the Russians, and that permeated the press. We forget that now. Then when Trump did the unthinkable, he won, both in anger at that fact, but also as a preemptive defense of their behavior. You see, because you got to remember the dialectic would have been, President Clinton, look at all I did for you. I should be rewarded. I went beyond the call of duty. And now the mentality went, my gosh, I've got legal exposure, so we've got to press further. So then it was a methodology of getting more FISA request,
right,
and disrupting the transition, and then finally the act that resulted in the Mueller report, the Mueller commission, and then to dethrone. And then finally, the larger context of this was when he was elected, there was an effort to sue three states for the voting machines and nullify the election. There was a sustained effort to give the Steele dossier to the electors and to persuade the electors not to vote according to their constitutional mandates. Then there was almost immediately 60 representatives that voted for impeachment the week he was inaugurated. Then there was an effort to sue under the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution to remove him. Then there was the 25th Amendment psychodrama that went on for. And then finally there was Rob Rosenstein and Andrew McKay meeting to see if they could pull cabinet members to remove him. This was in addition to the Stormy Daniels psychodrama, the Michael Cohen, the tax return. So there's been a sustained effort not to wait until 2020, but to remove the President of the United States under the idea that we are so moral and anointed, unelected officials, we have a duty to somebody higher than the American people. And boil that down, and it was a coup attempt to destroy the presidency before its tenure had expired.
So basically it was any means necessary were okay to try to remove the sitting president.
I think so. I think these unelected bureaucrats, call them what you want, deep state, members of the administrative state, they're analogous to people in history that worked in the Byzantine court or the L.S. Corral during the Spanish Empire, or the people at Versailles. They were a permanent cast of unelected representatives that felt that the liberal progressive project under Obama would be continued for a 16-year interlude.
Right.
And that somebody who didn't deserve to be nominated under no circumstances should have been president, and who, when he was elected, should fail. That was not happening. So they called upon themselves to remove him. And I'm not trying to be overdramatic, because remember on September 5th of 2018, we had an anonymous op-ed in the New York Times. That was geared, by the way, to come out at the same time of the Bob Woodward book.
Right, Fear.
It's a 1-2 punch, mm-hmm. in which a person said, I am a Republican, deep state, bureaucratic appointee within the administration, and I'm trying to stop what I think are wrong decisions by the president. I'm a member of the resistance. That's what he said.
Right.
That was trim away the imprimatur of the New York Times, and it was basically a call for insurrection.
Yeah, that's definitely how it read. I recall very, very distinctly. So speaking of the media, I remember being just utterly stunned that, you know, not that I had, you know, such great faith in the New York Times at this by this point, but that they would publish something like this. Did that astound you? It astounded me.
When those questions arise in my mind or most people's minds, they always ask, what would be the inverse? So somebody would say that during the Obama administration, let's say a high official within the Obama cabinet or executive branch would say, I really don't think the President of the United States has a legal right to grant unilateral amnesty. Or he might say, Obamacare, as Jonathan Gruber said, was sold on a lie, and the president misled the American people. Therefore, I have a higher duty to resist. And would the New York Times have published that? I don't think they would have. And had somebody actually submitted it to them, I imagine they would have sent it to the FBI to be investigated. That's, again, where we are in the United States now. And the idea is that progressivism has taken over the Democratic Party, and progressivism itself is transmogrifying into socialism. And under that ideology, it is, the law is flexible and malleable, and it's defined by what our ideas of morality are. The law is, can be good or bad depending whether it serves our egalitarian agendas, which are basically a quality result in a French revolutionary value system. And to the degree that you want to advance that, then the law makes the necessary adjustments. And that's what we've seen since Trump was elected.
So have the media been doing this sort of thing all along? I mean, essentially you're saying that the media have kind of become, is it part of this progressive caucus or something like that, or the majority of the media anyhow? Is that?
I think Trump, the media has always been left of center. But in the old days of Walter Cronkite or John Chancellor, when I was growing up, there was a sort of professional protocol that you weren't overt, you were implicit, but not overt. With the election of Trump, we've had people actually state, Jim Rutenberg in the New York Times, Christiane Ahnenpoort, CNN, saying that Trump poses such a danger to the Republic that a reporter has a higher duty to become a partisan. And then this term fake news is not just a rhetorical smear by Donald Trump. I mean, if you look at CNN, just to take one network, they reported that the bust of Martin Luther King was removed. It was not. They reported that James Comey would testify that Trump, he told Trump that he was under investigation. He did not do that. They said the Trump Tower meeting, Trump knew in advance. He did not know in advance. They said that Donald Trump was tipped off by the week. They admit they didn't know that. Anderson Cooper had to apologize for using some really crude language on the air about Trump. Reza Aslan, the religious editor, had to resign for using a smear. Two CNN reporters joked on a hot mic about Trump crashing. You remember Kathy Griffin held up the decapitated head of the CNN. That's just one network. And so, again, they've become a fusion party of the media and the Progressive Democratic Party. They're together. And you can see that with the WikiLeaks, when the Podesta Trove was released to the public, you had people like Dana Milbank or Glenn Thrush. These are marquee reporters that were writing to John Podesta and says, I'm really a hack, but I want you to proofread this, and you object, and I'll make any changes you want, as if the media has to have the Clinton campaign
approval or something.
Approval, yeah. I can't remember that happening in the United States. So, and this is all juxtaposed to the idea that Donald Trump hasn't done anything illegal to reporters. He may have talked about fake news and the media is the enemy of the people, but he hasn't surveilled people like Barack Obama did with the Associated Press reporters or with Fox News' James Rosen, where they actually broke into their accounts and surveilled their communication. So that's what's so bizarre about it.
He's actually quite accessible, actually, right?
Yes. And so he's had more press conference. He'll say anything, anywhere, to anyone, on any topic, Trump will, spontaneously. But we're in such a degree of polarization and hatred of Trump that it's blind at all reason. And so we don't say, Russia. What has Trump done with Russia? Well, he has upped the sanctions. He's killed Russians in Syria. He's been tough in the air over Syria. He's increased oil production by 3 million barrels. It hurts Russian oil. He's forced NATO to spend more. He's beefed up defense. He has tried to restore missile defense in Eastern Europe that Obama canceled on the hot mic. So he's been much more aggressive on Russia. But yet we have this albatross around his neck of Russian collusion. And he has no collusion. But that's because he says things in the art of the deal fashion about Putin. And so we live in times where all reason has been abandoned, and we just have to try to be empirical and look at actually what's done and not what's said about what's done.
Right.
There's been so much propaganda by the press, the media, that it has captivated from the left a good portion of the American public. But there's been a lot of lies, like Victor Davis Hanson laid out a series of about 10 or 12 major propaganda pieces that different publications had put out. And that is just what has mixed up the American public. Coming up next is the bar speech that he gave with Associate Attorney General there behind him when he released the Mueller report. And here we go with Attorney General William Barr.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for being here this morning. As you know, on March 22nd, Special Counsel Robert Mueller concluded his investigation into matters related to Russian attempts to interfere in our 2016 presidential election, and he submitted his confidential report to me pursuant to department regulations. As I said during my Senate confirmation hearing and since, I'm committed to ensuring the greatest degree possible of transparency concerning the special counsel's investigation, consistent with the law. At 11 this morning, I'm going to transmit copies of the public version of the special counsel's report to the chairman and ranking members of the Senate and House Judiciary Committees. The Department of Justice will also make the report available to the American people by posting it on the department's website after it has been delivered to Congress. I'd like to make a few comments today on the report. Before I do that, I want to thank Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein for joining me here today and for his assistance and counsel throughout this process. Rod, as you know, has served at the department for nearly 30 years with dedication and distinction, and it's been a great privilege and pleasure for me to work with him since my confirmation. He had well-deserved plans to step back from public service that were interrupted by my asking him to help in my transition. Rod has been an invaluable partner, and I am grateful that he is willing to help me and has been able to see the special counsel's investigation through to its conclusion. Thanks, Rod.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'd also like to thank Special Counsel Robert Mueller for his service. and the thoroughness of his investigation, particularly his work exposing the nature of Russia's attempts to interfere in our electoral process. As you know, one of the primary purposes of the special counsel's investigation was to determine whether President Trump's campaign or any individual associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 election. Volume 1 of the special counsel's report describes the results of that investigation. As you will see, the special counsel's report states that his, quote, investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. I am sure that all Americans share my concern about the efforts of the Russian government to interfere in our presidential election. As the special counsel report makes clear, the Russian government sought to interfere in our election process. But thanks to the special counsel's thorough investigation, we now know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign, or the knowing assistance of any other American, for that matter. That is something that all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed. The special counsel report outlines two main efforts by the Russian government to influence the 2016 election. First, the report details efforts by the Internet Research Agency, a Russian company with close ties to the Russian government, to sow social discord among American voters through disinformation and social media operations. Following a thorough investigation of this disinformation campaign, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian nationals and entities for their respective roles in this scheme. Those charges remain pending, and the individual defendants remain at large. But the special counsel found no evidence that any American, including anyone associated with the Trump campaign, conspired or coordinated with the Russian government or the IRA in this illegal scheme. Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation, unquote. Put another way, the special counsel found no collusion by any Americans in IRA's illegal activities. Second, the report details efforts by the Russian military officials associated with the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Organization, to hack into computers and steal documents and emails from individuals associated with the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign for the purpose of eventually publicizing these documents. Obtaining such unauthorized following a thorough investigation of these hacking operations, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian military officers for their respective roles in these illegal hacking operations. Those charges are still pending, and the defendants remain at large. But again, the special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these hacking operations. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking. The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the Internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication. WikiLeaks then made a series of document dumps. The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. After finding no underlying collusion with Russia, the special counsel's report goes on to consider whether certain actions of the president could amount to obstruction of the special counsel's investigation. As I addressed in my March 24th letter, the special counsel did not make a traditional prosecutorial judgment regarding this allegation. Instead, the report recounts 10 episodes involving the president and discusses potential legal theories for connecting those activities to the elements of an obstruction offense. After carefully reviewing the facts and legal theories outlined in the report and in consultation with the Office of Legal Counsel and other department lawyers, the Deputy Attorney General and I concluded that the evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. Although the Deputy Attorney General and I disagreed with some of the special counsel's legal theories and felt that some of the episodes examined did not amount to obstruction as a matter of law, we did not rely solely on that in making our decision. Instead, we accepted the special counsel's legal framework for purposes of our analysis and evaluated the evidence as presented by the special counsel in reaching our conclusions. In assessing the president's actions discussed in the report, it is important to bear in mind the context. President Trump faced an unprecedented situation. As he entered into office and sought to perform his responsibilities as president, federal agents and prosecutors were scrutinizing his conduct before and after taking office and the conduct of some of his associates. At the same time, there was relentless speculation in the news media about the president's personal culpability. Yet, as he said from the beginning, there was, in fact, no collusion. And as the special counsel's report acknowledges, there is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents and fueled by illegal leaks. Nonetheless, the White House fully cooperated with the special counsel's investigation, providing unfettered access to campaign and White House documents, directing senior aides to testify freely, and asserting no privilege claims. And at the same time, the president took no act that in fact deprived the special counsel of the documents and witnesses necessary to complete his investigation. Apart from whether the acts were obstructive, this evidence of non-corrupt motives weighs heavily against any allegation that the president had a corrupt intent to obstruct the investigation. Now, before I take questions, I want to address a few aspects of the process for producing the public report that I am releasing today. As I said several times, the report contains limited redactions related to four categories of information. To ensure as much transparency as possible, those redactions have been clearly labeled so that the readers can tell which redactions correspond to which categories. Now, as I to recall, those categories are 6E material, grand jury material, information that the IC believes would disclose sources and methods, information that would impair the investigation and prosecution of other cases that are underway, and finally, information that implicates the privacy and reputational interests of peripheral third parties. As you will see, most of the redactions were compelled by the need to prevent harm to ongoing matters and to comply with court orders prohibiting the public disclosure of information bearing on ongoing investigations and criminal cases, such as the IRA case and the Roger Stone case. These redactions were applied by Department of Justice attorneys working closely together with attorneys from the special counsel's office, as well as the intelligence community, and prosecutors are handling the ongoing cases. The redactions are their work product. No redactions done by anybody outside this group. There were no redactions done by anybody outside this group. No one outside this group proposed any redactions, and no one outside the department has seen the unredacted report, with the exception of certain sections that were made available to IC, the intelligence community, for their advice on protecting intelligence sources and methods. Consistent with longstanding executive branch practice, the decision whether to assert executive privilege over any portion of the report rested with the President of the United States. Because the White House had voluntarily cooperated with the special counsel, significant portions of the report contained material over which the President could have asserted privilege, and he would have been well within his rights to do so. Following my March 29th letter, the Office of the White House Counsel requested the opportunity to review the redacted version of the report in order to advise the President on the potential invocation of privilege, which is consistent with longstanding practice. Following that review, the President confirmed that in the interest of transparency and full disclosure to the American people, he would not assert privilege over the special counsel's report. Accordingly, the public report I am releasing today contains redactions only for the four categories that I previously outlined, and no material has been redacted based on executive privilege. In addition, earlier this week, the President's personal counsel requested and was given the opportunity to read a final version of the redacted report before it was publicly released. That request was consistent with the practice followed under the Ethics in Government Act, which permitted individuals named in a report prepared by an independent counsel the opportunity to read the report before publication. The President's personal lawyers were not permitted to make and did not request any redactions. In addition to making the redacted report public, we are also working with Congress to accommodate their legitimate oversight interests with respect to the special counsel's investigation. We have been consulting with Chairman Graham and Chairman Nadler through this process, and we will continue to do so. Given the limited nature of the redactions, I believe that the publicly released report will allow every American to understand the results of the special counsel's investigation. Nevertheless, in an effort to accommodate congressional requests, we will make available, subject to appropriate safeguards, to a bipartisan group of leaders from several congressional committees, a version of the report with all redactions removed, except those relating to grand jury information. Thus, these members of Congress will be able to see all of the redacted material for themselves, with the limited exception of that which, by law, cannot be shared. I believe that this accommodation, together with my upcoming testimony before the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, will satisfy any need Congress has for information regarding the special counsel's investigation. Once again, I'd like to thank you for being here.
Now the battle is just beginning. The congressional members and the committee members, both left and right, are beginning to go in and tear this thing to pieces. There are people that can allege in this, after a reading, close reading, that there's evidence there that there was obstruction of justice. And but there were never any, you know, indictments brought by Mueller, Robert Mueller. So unless there's indictments brought, then, it could be a moot point. But your left and many of your radical leftists that were Hillary supporters are saying, oh, there's throughout the whole report, we find evidence that that there was obstruction of justice by the president. And so we have an ongoing debate, between the administration and the enemy, enemy of the state, I guess you could say, like he seems to describe it sometimes. So, I mean, it's just going on and on and on. And I want to bring up next Lou Dobbs. He has some important things to say about immigration, and he's interviewing a long-term, you could say, member of the police that have been trying ICE, actually, that's been trying to make sense out of this immigration. Here we go with Lou Dobbs now.
Customs and Border Protection saying it, quote, does not endorse private groups or organizations taking enforcement matters into their own hands. Really? We'll take up the issue here tonight. Joining us tonight, Tom Homan, former acting director of Immigration Customs Enforcement, Fox Business contributor, great American. And Tom, it is great to have you with us tonight. Let's start with...
Great to be with you, Lou.
Thank you, sir. Let's start with the border crisis. In all of this, people are right now distracted considerably, and in most cases rightly so, but that border is still aflame. Border crossers by the thousands are every day moving into the United States or being released into the United States. Your thoughts?
Look, I've been saying it for a long time. It's going to keep coming, Lou, because there's no consequence. There's no deterrence. That's why I'm pushing. I'll say it again. ICE needs to get out there, do a nationwide operation, look for these family groups and single adults who've had their court date, either didn't show up and got an order removed or showed up when the order removed. 90% of them are in that bucket, a couple hundred thousand. Do a national operation, find them, remove them, and show Central America we're taking this seriously. I did it 3.5 years ago, and it worked. The border numbers went down significantly.
And catch and release. Everyone has talked about it from the president on down. Catch and release is still in effect, and the numbers are dispiriting, to say the least, at the number of illegal immigrants who are being released into American society.
Well, two things just happened that's going to help with that. You know, the Wait in Mexico program has just expanded across the southwest border.
Right.
Again, they've had a Ninth Circuit rule against it, but there was a stay, so DHS can still go forward. So they need to go forward fast on this before the Ninth Circuit ends up shutting them down. The second thing is the Attorney General made a great decision that asylum seekers who passed their first credible asylum interview, if they crossed the border illegally, they usually would get bond. He's saying, no, that's not the way the law reads. Right. The IRA of 1996 doesn't read that way. If you enter this country legally and claim asylum, and even if you pass your first interview, you're going to be detained until you see a judge. That is a great ruling. That's going to help.
I have to say, I was stunned as I read his order, his ruling, overruling a immigration judge in that case, because I, for the life of me, did not realize how clear the statute was, the regulation. And he's exactly right. That means that this has been going on through three presidencies until this attorney general stepped forward and shut it down.
Look, amen. Look, if you look at what's really happening, if you come to the port of entry, claim asylum, which is the legal way to do it, you weren't allowed bond. You weren't allowed bond. But if you entered the country illegally in violation of our law and claim asylum, you were allowed bond. That is a complete opposite of the way it should be. So he went back to the way the law was written.
And the incentives under two previous presidents, these are outright incentives for illegal immigration into this country. And it's that straightforward. Let's turn to, if we may, some of this absurd fight against ICE, the Rashida Tlaib, the radical Democratic congresswoman, threatening a hunger strike to push for the shutdown of immigration and enforcement. the radical Dems are focusing on ICE, and it infuriates them. It drives them to some sort of psychosis that, to me, is inexplicable. Your thoughts?
It's disgusting. And she's disgusting. I can't even believe how she got elected to Congress with the thoughts in her positions on this. Look, if she don't like what ICE does, then do your job as a congresswoman and change whatever laws you think you need to change. But men and women of ICE aren't making this up. They're enforcing laws that Congress enacted. And to tell, if they're supposed to be love these illegal immigrants, they want open borders, and they want these people going hunger strike. Let me let her in on a little secret. And it's not a secret. Go on hunger strike. Then we'll get a court order and we'll force feed them. Just because you go on hunger strike doesn't mean you're going to be released. So she's telling illegal aliens that are in our detention, mm-hmm. put yourself in harm's way, get sick, rather than me, a congresswoman, doing my job. I won't put it on the illegal alien. I won't try to embarrass ICE by having sick people in detention. That's shameful and it's disgusting. And the Democratic leadership needs to do something about it.
The Democratic leadership needs to do something about it. The president is moving to reform Department of Homeland Security. Think about this. The president ordering a shift from emphasis and priority within Department of Homeland Security from counterterrorism to illegal immigration and border security. It is the largest department. It is a mammoth creature, as you know. But you can already begin to see some of the effects of that decision on the part of the president.
President Trump is a great president. I've worked for 6 presidents. He's done more for border security than any president. He is the only one trying to address border security, his administration. Mm-hmm. The Democratic leadership hasn't offered up one option, one idea. They hate this president so much, they resist this president, that it's more important than to hate this president, see him fail, yeah. than to do their job and defend this country. They hate this president more than they love the country. It's disgusting. Yeah. President Trump is the only one doing anything about the border. He's a great president, and he will not fail the American people. He will not give up.
And, you know, you say that the radical Dems, the left in this country, hate the president more than they love the country. I think that is true. But let's be, I think, very clear about this. They hate the fact that they are not in power, that Hillary Clinton is not the president. They hate that. But this is all about power, no matter how they want to dress it up or obfuscate the reality. This is about power, and they know that they are now vulnerable as a result of this president prevailing against a 22-month-long witch hunt that is going to change history in this country for the better and for a very long period of time. Tom Homan, it is great to see you. Thank you for being with us, my friend.
Next, we have some information on these militias, or however you want to describe them, that are going along the border there, and the vigilante groups, I guess is what vigilante groups are going along the border. I think there's a group out there in New Mexico that's actually detaining some of these illegal immigrants, and then they're holding them until Border Patrol comes along or more, established or authority with vested full arrest authority, and then they turned over to them. But here we go now with this very, very good interview.
The border battle, a county in New Mexico declaring a state of emergency, demanding the state's governor deploy the National Guard. Now, some private citizens are taking things a step further. Jonathan Hunt live from our West Coast newsroom this morning. Jonathan.
Good morning, Sandra. Ground zero for the border battle seems to shift on an almost weekly basis. California one week, Arizona another, Texas, and now New Mexico, where private citizens are apparently acting as vigilante groups, stopping and detaining immigrants. As you can see in this video, the men and women dress in military-style uniforms, they carry weapons, and appear on video that we've listened to identify themselves as police officers when they find immigrants who have crossed the border in remote areas. They then detain those immigrants while calling the real Border Patrol agents. They call themselves the United Constitutional Patriots.
We're simply out here documenting and helping a stressed and overstrained Border Patrol that, believe it or not, needs our help. And you guys have seen how well we work together. Okay, there's no issues there. We get along great with Border Patrol. They get along with us. We work together, and yada, yada, yada. So whatever.
The ACLU has written to the governor of New Mexico saying, quote, the Trump administration's vile racism has emboldened white nationalists and fascists to flagrantly violate the law. This has no place in our state. We cannot allow racist and armed vigilantes to kidnap and detain people seeking asylum. We urge you to immediately investigate this atrocious and unlawful conduct. While the governor issued a statement herself saying, quote, if migrant families are made to feel threatened, that's completely unacceptable, and it should go without saying that regular citizens have no authority to arrest or detain anyone. Now, the vigilante action comes as U.S. Border Patrol reports a surge of migrant families crossing into New Mexico, with 720 migrants detained in one 24-hour period just this week. In February, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham withdrew National Guard troops from the border there, saying that President Trump's claims of a crisis were not true. Sandra?
Jonathan Hunt, thank you.
There are groups out there that do care about our border security that are peacefully detaining these illegal immigrants, turn them over to the authorities, the authorities that have full arrest power. Okay, we're going to end with Kellyanne. And Kellyanne, man, she's a cracker. Anyway, she comes back and she ends with a little bit of information about the president on his Easter vacation down in Florida. So here we go with Kellyanne.
Information about how to, about Hillary Clinton and how to beat her. I look no further than Hillary Clinton.
Kellyanne, it also makes pretty clear that the only reason that the obstruction of justice piece wouldn't, in essence, stick is because a lot of people around the president wouldn't do what they had asked him to do.
Well, that's punditry. That's actually not a sophisticated legal analysis. And I will tell you, if the president asked me to break the law today, I'd walk out the door. I wouldn't even take the pictures of my kids off the wall. So all I want to say is that for all the conversation about what he did or did not ask somebody to do, or he's mad about Jeff Sessions' recusal. Jeff Sessions was the attorney general for 18 months after that. Don McGahn was White House counsel for 18 months after that. So the president has the right to fire any of us at any moment. He showed his right, his constitutional right, by firing Jim Comey. He could have fired Mueller. He could have fired McGahn, Sessions, Kellyanne Conway. He didn't do that.
The report shows that he tried to do so, and people around him, in essence, blocked him from doing that.
But intent matters. Intent matters. No, intent should matter. Intent has never mattered to any of you, respectfully, throughout this whole thing. Was there intent to collude? Was there an intent to commit a crime? Was there intent to conspire with Russians? Is there intent to steal the election from poor old Hillary Clinton, I'm sure, for whom most of you voted? The intent matters. And the president's intention here was not to do that. And so intent matters. And I know you want to cherry pick one line here or one line there, because the big lie that you've let fly for 2 years, it's over, folks. I mean, I guess if people want to investigate in Congress, they want to waste their time and not listen to people like Nancy Pelosi who are saying, let's not impeach, let's move on, let's talk about, what was her word yesterday, kitchen table issues. Let's have at it, because I present to you the document that shows the Democrats' successes. Hi. This is the success of the Democrats in the first 100 days in Congress. Here it is. There's nothing.
Can I ask you, the president, if I can ask you, Kellyanne, about... There were moments mentioned in the Mueller report where there were contacts between the Trump campaign, Trump associates, and Russians, Russian operatives, and so on. And what happened following that is we got some false information about those contacts from the campaign, from people at the White House, from the press secretary, and so on. There were moments.
Is there a question in there?
Well, the question is there any regret for passing on false information to explain some of these contacts and some of these conversations that went on about what was going on during
about
the campaign.
About whom are you speaking in the campaign?
For
this
example,
is important.
So for example,
because I'm yet to meet some of these people, and I was a campaign manager.
I've never met
Carter Page.
So the Trump
I
Tower,
don't think I've met
Trump
George
Tower
Papadopoulos.
Meeting, the Trump Tower
Maybe
meeting,
I have.
The Trump Tower meeting involving the president's son and son-in-law campaign
total
chair.
Total exoneration
Manafort.
From that, Jim.
I know,
what's been rumored, because nobody in the media is never under oath.
Russian
all
adoption.
These people who sit on TV all day,
right.
You're here working hard. You have people on your network sitting on TV all day just saying things. Because they're not under oath. They could just say whatever they want. Does Adam Schiff, where is the, quote, ample investigation? ample evidence of collusion. Where is it? Tell them to bring it over right now.
Tell us why, Kellyanne. Hold on. If you could tell us why, Kellyanne, why were we originally told a bogus story about that, that meeting was about Russian adoptions?
No, that is not. It says it's primarily, I read the quote in the New York Times article that it's primarily, and it's in the Mueller report. I just read all that. I'm using my very expensive law degree today. I read that in the report. I read the entire section where there's an exchange between Don Jr. and Hope Hicks, and he says primarily we discussed, and he says there's some BS stuff at the beginning about Hillary, but it wasn't important, and we went right by it. It's right there for you to see. Well, you're being told now. No, you conjectured about it for 2 years, and it's not true. So the truth is what's in the report, and Don Jr.'s exonerated, Hope Hicks, Don Sr. is exonerated, and you're just going to have to move on and start covering issues that Americans are telling you in your own polling is important to them. Healthcare, which we work on here, education, the economy, foreign policy, denuclearized North Korea. Like, we have a lot to solve in this country. I said to you 2.5 years ago when the president was elected, I said that we're going to have joint custody of this country for the next 4 to 8 years. We got 6 to go. 5.5 to go. We got to find a way to manage that joint custody of this country. You've got to be honest with the American people, Jim, that there's no collusion.
Okay, so
you guys have all these screams.
We're getting back to being honest, Kellyanne. There is also a comment.
Kellyanne, has President Trump ever expressed concern to you if that presidency was going to come?
Never once. I was very surprised to see that by somebody who's been here sparingly over the last couple of years. I was very surprised to see that because that was not the reaction of the president that day when I was there. And he has never, there are words that where the president's quoted throughout the report where he doesn't use those words. So I'm not sure, you can ask the people about that. But I will tell you, he has never once on the campaign said, I think we should resign. I'm not gonna run anymore. Let's just, we're done here. I can go back to my happy life, make billions of dollars. He has never said that during the campaign. He has certainly never said it since we're here. And I've been by his side for 3 straight years now on the campaign in here. He has never expressed that, like, my presidency is over. And I know that that was the promise and the wish of many people who, for some reason, you give a lot of airtime and ink to, who have zero credibility now, who promised collusion, who swore there'd be criminal conspiracy, who would whisper in the ears of people like me that my colleagues or members of the Trump family or both would be headed to jail, would be indicted by the grand jury, would be taken, you know, to prison. I mean, that's really a disgrace. People are whispering in our ears about that. None of that happened. I think it's time to move on. Total exoneration. The president's in a great mood. And I think what's incredibly important here is that democracy in the world's greatest country, greatest democracy, flourishes. You don't need to collude with a foreign government. You don't need to get information from WikiLeaks. You can win elections fairly and squarely.
Email hacked by Russia.
Does this vindicate?
President liked to see Mueller testify as Democrats are falling for. Does he think that would be one more step?
Well, I'd ask you, Kristen, though, why are they asking for Mr. Mueller to testify? This was the Mueller investigation. This is the Mueller report. These were the Mueller redactions in concert with the Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General and Office of Legal Counsel. So why would...
Part of congressional oversight.
Fine. If they think it is, then they can call him to testify. But the country also has a right to ask, when are you going to legislate and not investigate? Is this oversight or overreach? The Attorney General said today, sure, you want to call Mr. Mueller to testify, call him to testify. But I think the burden is increasingly going to be on those who won't let go of this big lie to prove why they're continuing it just in a different form. I mean, we had the Mueller investigation. That was going to be the gold standard. You know how many times I was asked, 6 ways to Sunday, will he fire Rosenstein? Will he fire Mueller? Will he fire, will he shut down the special counsel's investigation? None of that happened. If anything, if you read the report, total compliance and total exoneration.
Point-by-point rebuttal, Kellyanne. Where's the president's point-by-point rebuttal that Rudy Giuliani said was coming out?
He doesn't need a point-by-point rebuttal. You know who his greatest rebuttal will be? His greatest rebuttal will be he's in office, he's going to remain in office, and he'll get reelected. Because the Democrats have nothing. They banked everything on this. You have 15, 18 people running for president and not a single message that doesn't involve Trump, 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 Trump. And some of them have promised collusion, some of them running for president, some people who chair powerful committees over on Capitol Hill, or ranking members over on Capitol Hill have promised collusion, have said they've got proof of criminal conspiracy. Just because they're on TV shows vomiting their own nonsense and talking points every night and not under oath doesn't mean that they should face full exoneration. They should produce that evidence. If they love this country and they have evidence that somehow a 22-month investigation by the special counsel, independent, with taxpayer dollars, couldn't find it, but somehow Adam Schiff has it or Jerry Nadler has it. Let's see it. Where is it? Well, the president said all along it's a witch hunt and it's a hoax. I just called it a political proctology exam, and we emerged with a clean bill of health. But investigating the investigators is something that some of the investigators think would be a good idea. This country, look, if you're going to scream about transparency and accountability and you need investigations for 2 years, then I got 22 more months to wait to see how we got here in the first place. Those FISA applications, why the FBI was making payments to Christopher Steele and his dirty dossier, also paid by Hillary Clinton and the DNC. What's his name? Glenn Simpson has taken the fifth. Fusion GPS, I'd like to know more about that. You've all seen some of the text messages, but texting, between Strzok and Page, and you know what Nellie Orr and Bruce Orr were doing, her at Fusion GPS, him at the FBI, at the Department of Justice. I think America has been told by all of you, so thank you for that, that we have a right to know. We want transparency and accountability. We want to make sure democracy is honest. Then let's investigate the investigators. How did we get here? Because when the president says it should never happen to another president ever again, let's see how we got here. How did it start?
Kellyanne, you also talked about
didn't it start when he went on state and encouraged Russia to hack the election?
The report suggests that Donald Trump did try to get rid of Robert Mueller, that there was an attempt at obstruction of justice, but that his team wouldn't allow that.
I just answered that question.
How does that amount to obstruction?
Yeah, no. So they found no obstruction. I think you got to read the report completely and not just take it out and then listen to people on TV who are playing lawyer. I sure have. I've read the whole report and I got it very recently. And so, no, let me just make the point. Let me just make the point to you that the president, if you look at the entire report, the president had the complete right to fire Mueller. If he wanted to get rid of Mueller, he could just fire him. He doesn't need to do anything else. He could just fire him the way he fired Comey. He has a constitutional right to do that. And this report made clear that there's no evidence that he fired Jim Comey to try to impede the investigation into Russians and the campaign. Did not do that whatsoever. He fired Comey because he could. He could have fired Mueller. He could have fired Rosenstein. He certainly has fired a lot of people here, including people who are quoted through the report polishing apples, if you ask me. He could fire me when I walk in the building. He has the right to do all of that. So if he wanted to get rid of Mueller, he could have gotten rid of Mueller.
Does the Attorney General Barr plan to go after the illegal leakers in the DOJ and FBI?
You'd have to ask the Attorney General that. I refer that to the Department of Justice.
Would you favor it?
But we've been talking about investigations and transparency built on very little, if anything. So I'd say there's ample evidence of other. I mean, look, people obviously were leaking information. Comey said that he put things out there hoping that the, you know, leak the information, hoping that it would trigger an investigation, trigger a special counsel. Careful what you wish for. Andrew McCabe is a confirmed leaker and liar. So we know there have been leaks. And again, in the interest of our thriving democracy, before the president gets reelected, which is a sure thing at this point, let's have, since we see ungots, as my Italian grandma would say, nothing on the other side. Let's see who was leaking. Let's put them under oath. Let's investigate the investigators. Why not? And anybody who objects to that is just being partisan and having amnesia about how much we all love transparency.
Can I ask you a quick question about?
Kellyanne, you said that the president was in a good mood.
He's in a great mood.
A little bit about sort of a TikTok this morning. When did he get the news that he watched on TV? What has he said?
Well, I won't go through any private meetings, but many of us have been with him throughout the day. You saw him at the Wounded Warriors Project. He was down there taking pictures. I know there was, you know, why is he a half an hour late? He's taking pictures with them, talking to his lawyers, watching the press conference, obviously. And then a number of us were going through the report bit by bit. And he's in there right now, asked me to come outside, have a little talk with you. But he, of course, has the last word on all of this. He's the one who was democratically elected fairly and squarely, and he's the one who I'm sure will address you, or I hope will address you at 4 o'clock when he leaves for a well-deserved Easter break with his family.
That concludes our program for this evening. Thank you very much, and God bless each and every one of you out there. Good night.